Well, now, Mr. Shapiro, pull your head out of the from whence it is buried, reading both sides' briefs.
Indeed, although I have to say, hearing my name spoken in the same sentence as the wonderful Dolly Parton makes my week, Philip, that you just couldn't do better, especially, and it's redemptive, particularly since I have been reading the briefs in President Trump's second impeachment trial, which a few hours from when we speak will open up. And, you know, it's perhaps to everyone's surprise, it's really quite interesting. There are two huge, important constitutional questions that are on the table and that will be argued out beginning this afternoon here. There's, first of all, the question of whether President Trump can be, you know, he's been impeached. This is an impeachment trial under the Constitution. Can he be tried at all? You know, a conviction requires a two-thirds majority of the Senate, but his defense lays out a case that, you know, you can only impeach a president for the purpose of removing him from office, and he's already been removed from office, so, or he's by the vote, so this is unconstitutional. Of course,
I'm with him. Yeah, as you know, well, I've been a long-term supporter. I'm with him.
Right. Of course, you know, the fact is that we are still trying President Trump only because the Senate Republicans refused to reconvene to try the president in the days after his impeachment was voted by the House. So there's a, you know, something circular here. But it nonetheless is going to be, I think, 4 hours or so of debate on that question this afternoon. And then I think the real sort of national constitutional law question that we will deal with in this trial is the question of free speech. The other half of the president's kind of strange defense team of criminal defense and personal injury lawyers who've managed to come together here is that this is the president's words on January 6th and in all the weeks leading up to it, the call to people to invalidate the election, the call to march on Washington, the call at the march to leave its designated permit-granted space and march to the Capitol to fight like hell, all of those are protected speech, goes the brief, under and under protected speech under the Constitution. It's all free speech, and that is simply not impeachable. Now, first of all, impeachment and its loose standard of high crimes and misdemeanors is not criminal law, so there's an interesting question about whether that standard should apply at all. But what the House managers, the representatives led by Jamie Raskin, who are essentially arguing the prosecution, are going to tell us is that the president's speech, not only on the 6th, but in all the days leading up to it, amounted to incitement to insurrection, which under a super famous First Amendment precedent, Brandenburg versus Ohio back in the 1930s, is the one of the outer limits of free speech. You cannot do incitement to insurrection. You know, the president's team claims his fighting words were just generic. The House impeachment managers are going to argue that, no, if anything counts as incitement to insurrection, it is the president's words. And they're going to, I think, we're getting hints that as evidence, they will be using not only the president's speeches, but the words of those marauders, that lynch mob who went into the Capitol on January 6th, who in media appearance after media appearance and in prosecution interview after prosecution interview have cited the president's words, have said, our president asked us to be here. So, you know, there may be some surprises. There's room for some surprises in the days to come. This is probably going to be a quick impeachment. The idea is to have it over by the time you and I talk next week. But of course, you know, most of the Republicans we expect will not vote to convict. And yet, these arguments are profound and may lead us to some interesting places.
Okay. Now, tell me briefly about Jamie Raskin, who's the leading, well, he's the House impeachment manager. Pretty interesting fella.
He is. Jamie Raskin came into electoral politics already as a distinguished constitutional law scholar. A scholar of voting rights and civil liberties, and also, interestingly, the son of Marcus Raskin, one of the leading progressive intellectuals of the anti-Vietnam War movement and after, a colleague of mine at The Nation for many years, the head of the Institute for Policy Studies, the most important left-wing think tank in Washington. So he is, you know, Jamie is kind of progressive royalty, but he also is one of those people in Congress who has a completely unobstructed view of the U.S. Constitution, and he's bringing as well an unusual weight of tragedy, which he has discussed. In the days right before January 6th, Jamie Raskin's own adult son died by suicide and after a long history of mental illness. And Raskin was both mourning this loss and being an articulate spokesman for the needs of the mentally ill and for the urgent public mental health issues facing this country at the time that the events exploded. So he has taken on this lead role in defending the Constitution, even in a period of personal loss and mourning, something that I think has garnered some cross-aisle respect.
Only moments left. As you probably know, Itis cake is a cure for COVID, and I'm sending you a slice. How are the Democrats pushing through their jab agenda?
Well, the fascinating thing is that they really are, against expectations sometimes, going for broke. And the most interesting thing we're seeing now is the emergence of President Biden pushing a national child care subsidy, basically, or a national child family and child income credit that is an attempt to lift millions of families, millions of children out of poverty. And it's such an unusual, compelling case, such a kind of stand against the stripping of social welfare that we've seen since the 1990s, that it does seem to mark a new argument, the idea of a standard universal family income. Will be played with. There's a Republican proposal on the same thing that Mitt Romney has, which is cheaper and would cut some benefits from the Democratic version. But it's like a page has been turned, and we're no longer arguing about cutting welfare, social welfare benefits. We're just arguing about how much and for how long and how fundamental. It's an interesting time and something that we will talk more about.
It reminds me that Biden made the observation recently that, Obama made the point that Joe is closer to Bernie Sanders than anyone expected. Look, Bruce, thanks for that. I understand it's pretty cold in your neck of the woods.
It is brass monkey season here.
I won't go into that. Disgusting metaphor. But thanks, Bruce. Bruce Shapiro, he's columnist with The Nation, exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. And this is a little program called Late Night Live.